Otis E. from Baltimore.
My name is Artie. I'm an addict.
Hey,
and I am a proud and participating member of the Promises Freedom Group of the Baltimore area of Narcotics Anonymous. We are a 12-step, 12-tradition, and 12-concept meeting. If you are ever in Baltimore on a Monday or a Wednesday night from 8 to 9:30, stop down and visit us. I am also an individual that can articulate the language with the proper enunciation and pronunciation to give an oration in any vernacular for the form that I have to make a dissertation in. I say that to give you an understanding that I do have full command of the English language. But I don't want you to hear me. I want you to feel me. So therefore, I'm going to have to say some things that you will feel. In a little less than 2 weeks, I'll have 21 years clean. I say that because I'm from the shut the fuck up generation of Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't apologize for that. And part of the reason why they did that wasn't because they didn't love the newcomer. Part of the reason why they did that is because at that time, the fellowship was so small that each and every life was precious. They could not afford to allow one person to talk their way out of the meeting, because that one person may be the person that any of us may have needed to save our lives on a different day. They did that because the life-saving message of Narcotics Anonymous was being formed and developed, and they couldn't take the chance of, as they said, misinformation. Charlie C. just talked about, well, when we come in from the streets, all we got is the streets. Well, if all we got is the streets, and the streets is what brought us into that dilemma that brought us here, what are we going to be talking about? He talked about how when you get that thorough ass whipping, you ain't got a whole lot to say. And I love boxing. And whenever somebody, one of them fighters, got a thorough ass whipping, they always do an interview. What do they say? He won. They don't give excuses and stuff like that. Basically, they ain't got a whole lot to say, because it isn't a whole lot to say. My topic is spiritual manipulation. I believe in keeping it simple. I really do. And we can get cute with topics as far as how we name them, and as a result of getting cute, we miss things. My sixth step told me that I have the propensity of taking a character defect and dressing it up as a spiritual principle, which means I can be the individual who is claiming honesty but being brutally blunt, but brutally blunt is abuse. It's abuse. And it doesn't matter how I do it, it's abuse. And I know this because a good friend of mine had about 11, 13 years clean. He went back out. He struggled to get back. He came back, and he was making a real effort to stay clean. So he came to see me. We talking about going to a meeting and doing some things. We're sitting out in front of my apartment building, and he's talking about his clean date and how he should have his clean date and how it hurts not to have his clean date. Me, I've shared in most of the United States, 3 provinces in Canada, and 2 cities in Mexico. I can share like Shakespeare when I get in the mood. What do I say to them? Motherfucker, don't you know that none of us have a permanent clean date? All we get is a daily reprieve from this disease. If I don't do what I'm supposed to do, my clean date can change. Now, there was a lot of truth in that, but there was no compassion. And because there was no compassion, my justification was that I was being honest. The reality is, I was being abusive. And that happens because I have to stay in touch with not the disease of addiction. I need to stay in touch with my disease of addiction. After you've been here for a certain amount of time, you can't go with generic recovery. You can't. We are many and varied. Diversity is our strength. And if that's true, then I need to be in touch with my disease. How does my disease attack me? How does my disease manipulate me into a corner? How does my disease show up and look oh so tempting? How does my disease allow me to think that that an obsession is a gift? And I find through the inventory process that my disease does that because my disease has the ability to adapt. Now, a lot of times when it comes to spiritual manipulation, we will go through things, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about me. We will go through things such as, my disease made me do that. My disease made me do that. My disease, motherfucker, you were bored. You just did what the fuck you wanted to do. We will go through things like saying, you know, I'm an addict. Yeah, I am an addict. But I'm not suffering from obsession and compulsion right now. I just felt rebellious. You know, like them times you're on the job and your supervisor gives you an assignment, but you don't want to do the assignment, so you figure you're going to challenge the supervisor. But then when the supervisor challenges you back, then you want to go through all these different procedures to show that you are right. And the bottom line is, how important is it that you're right? Or more importantly, what happened to the humility to let you know your place, that as an employee, that if your supervisor gives you some direction, good, bad, or indifferent, right or wrong, you're just supposed to do it? Especially when you understand that, like, your true nature of unmanageability is your inability to cope with your feelings, and as a result of not being able to cope with your feelings, you're still living paycheck to paycheck. And it don't matter how good that paycheck is, paycheck to paycheck. Which means you can ill afford to lose your job, so why are you throwing bricks at the penitentiary? So a lot of times what can be claimed, I was in denial. But true denial, you don't know when you're in it until you get out. So therefore, through the step process of doing, first coming to believe in this process, and if I believe in this process, I believe that the more will be revealed and I will get my answers when I'm supposed to. And if I can just relinquish control, I could be able to turn it over. So God, in his infinite wisdom, that when I'm ready, will show me what I need to see. So that as I do an inventory, I will begin to get a clue of maybe I might want to go talk to my sponsor so I can get to the exact nature, not so much of the wrong, but because I know what my defects and my shortcomings are. How about getting down to the exact nature of me? What is it about me that I can be doing so well and then just throw a monkey wrench into it? What is it about me that allows me to display infinite potential but never quite live up to that potential, and just as I'm getting close to the prize, I will self-destruct? So I need to look at some of those things. And what I got in touch with is that a lot of times, instead of me going through denial, I'm going through self-deception. When I'm selling me a bill of goods, when I'm purchasing the burn bag for myself. And as a result of doing that, I have also the ability that, like, sometimes I don't want to face my reality, and in order not to face my reality, I need to create some shit. So I go into what's known as refusal. And when I'm in refusal, I sing the Addict's National Anthem. Fuck it, I don't care. I'm just going to do what I want to do because this is what I want to do. I want to do it because I don't want to feel the pain of facing the truth. And the truth that I have to face is the truth about me, and I found out that there are two things that happens when you face the truth. Yes, the truth will set you free, but it will piss you the fuck off if it's about you. Finding out that, like, you can talk and you can act like you have no fears, but the reality is you're an emotional coward because intimacy scares the hell out of you, because you've gotten in touch with real intimacy is when you strip down and make yourself vulnerable enough to allow another person to nurture them, which means you are giving up complete control. Can you do that? That relationships are based upon commitment. And one of the commitments is that you need to be emotionally available. But how are you going to be emotionally available to somebody else where you can be totally irresponsible to yourself, as our literature talks about, through my inability to accept personal responsibility? I'm actually, thank you, brother. You are actually creating your own problem. Which means, when did you live up to your potential? Because it's been revealed to you through an 11th step. You've practiced it by carrying the message in a 12th step. And you are getting these indicators, not just from the people in the fellowship, but from non-addicts about what you're capable of doing. But your, not laziness, your fear, not fear of failure, because when you fail, nobody expects nothing from you, but your fear of success keeps you from reaching even further. How did I get in touch with this? Sitting in the New Jersey Regional Convention some years ago when Dutch was doing the men's sponsorship, and he said, sponsorship, and this is going to be a group participation. He said, everybody raise your hand as high as you can. Everybody did. He said, now stretch it 2 more inches. Everybody stretched. He said, that's what sponsorship is about, getting you to go that little bit extra that you didn't attempt the first time. And there are times when you get in this process where you need to have enough emotional maturity to do it on your own. Why do I always need a kick in the ass to do what I'm supposed to do? Why do I always doubt myself when I've got years of experience that tells me that, like, what you can't do, God will give you the abilities and capacities to do that are beyond your power? And what I've come to understand is my disease is still a power greater than me. That's not a cop-out. What it means is you and I have a greater responsibility, because the longer you stay clean, the more work you got to do. And to be honest with you, sometimes I want a day off. Sometimes I want a day off from the recovery process. And I ain't talking about using. I'm talking about sometimes I just want a day off from being honest, from being humble, from being accepting. Just let me be me. The delusion in that is, if you just be you, you are reverting back to type, which means none of those defective survival skills have gone anywhere. They're just in retirement on the shelf. That get pushed into a corner, you will grab an old survival skill that is a defect a lot quicker than you will grab a spiritual principle, which is why I need to practice these principles in all my affairs. Because it's only through the practice that I develop some sort of discipline to do it regularly that I may develop some sort of proficiency and then be able to possibly get another day clean. But then ego and arrogance come into the picture. The ego and arrogance of having some years clean, some steps, some traditions, maybe some concepts underneath your belt, and you're dealing with an old character defect. I had to really take a look at that old character defect statement, because old character defect, to me, indicates this is something I've dealt with before, so I know how to handle it. How do you handle a disease that's still a power greater than you? The reality is, I'm dealing with a present defect. And if I don't recognize it as being a present defect, so that I'm still in touch with what is behind this defect, is this disease that I suffer from, then I'm not going to use the resources that this program has made available to me that is a power greater than my disease to get my ass out the fire. So therefore, I have opted out that pain is necessary, but misery and suffering is optional. I went straight to volunteering for the optional. And what that shows me is that, hey, just maybe, you ain't ready to graduate. Just maybe, you may want to stick around here a little bit longer. Just maybe you might want to redefine some things. Yeah, you may have double digits, but on any given day, you can still claim newcomer status. Because when I go through certain things that I've never dealt with before, I'm just as baffled, confused, as I was when I only had 30 days clean. Case in point, I'm part of the Hep C generation. And as a result of it, I had to take the medication in order to deal with it. There are certain side effects that come from the medication. And I'm what you call an intellectual addict. So I did some research before I got started. When I got the medication, that piece of paper that has the chemical breakdown and everything on it, I carefully read it. I highlighted the possible side effects and so on and so forth. I took it to my supervisor and told her I was going on this medication, gave her the highlighted sheet, and these are some of the things that I can go through. If you should see this, please pull me up about it. They did. I thought I made some adjustments until I found myself in this office with six of my other co-workers, my supervisor, and they're telling me about all these things about me, my personality, and so on and so forth. And bottom line is, they said, we don't think it has anything to do with the medication. Now, not a single person in that room, not a single person in that room had an MD's license, let alone was a gastroenterologist, which is a liver specialist. So it's like, how can you tell me, how can you even say that? I had to look at what was really going on. And it took me a while to look at it, because basically in them doing what they did, I'm angry. I'm angered and I'm on borderline rage, which was further pushed by my supervisor talking to me about she wanted to see me after that meeting alone in her office, and she giving me this speech about my potential, my abilities, and I've been there for over 12 years, and she has watched me just destroy things on three different occasions. You need some professional help. And it was everything I could do not to go across that table and just choke the shit out of her. I called some people that I knew. I talked to some people that I knew. Nobody had a real answer, but they shared with me some of the things that was happening with them in the here and now, what I got in touch with. It didn't matter what my supervisor thought. It didn't matter what those people said. What mattered was I forgot I was an addict. I forgot that, like, I still have this disease. I forgot that my disease no longer screams in my ear like a disrespectful drill sergeant, but now it talks to me in one of two ways. The first way is a very sweet, subtle, and seductive voice. The second way it speaks to me, it sounds just like me. And it sounds like such a good idea at the time. Why not? It sounds reasonable to me. And after realizing that, I had to do some stuff, and I looked at some stuff, and I found out that, like, yes, it was a personality change. That was real, regardless of what they said. What was behind the personality change is I still have this disease of addiction. And my personality can change on any given day without taking any other type of medication. Any of y'all that have gotten pissed off understand what I'm talking about. Second thing is I'm dealing with a medication that does create personality changes, and I have no idea as to how these personality changes come and when they come from. But then the revealing thing was I was doing shit just because I thought I could get away with it. I seen the opportunity where I can have that charge, that excitement, that rush of doing something and getting away with it, which I was identified in a fourth step that was pointed out to me in a fifth step by a sponsor. Everything ain't your disease, Artie. Sometimes you just like doing wrong just to say that you smarter than the next person because you got away with it. Sometimes you will do that just to feel the adrenaline of going through the motions, like going to cop. Stomach be bubbling, muscles be twitching as you going because you know there's a certain amount of danger involved. Will I get burnt? Will I get arrested? Will somebody stick me up? On and on. It is the thrill of the chase. It's still there. And as a result of this, what I've gotten in touch with, it's more important for me to keep things simple than it is for me to dress it up. That spiritual manipulation is just another way of me saying that, like, I ain't doing no damn work. That spiritual manipulation is I can't manipulate spiritual things, but I can be manipulated. I could be manipulated through my delusional thinking. I could be manipulated from being in the grips of my disease. I could be manipulated not so much by you, but by your disease. Because I know enough about my disease that I know my disease will step out of the way so your disease can attack me to take me out. Because we used to say the disease will show up in one area but attack you from another. This is a disease of misdirection. It will get you to look over here and distract you while it waylays your ass from the other direction. So that's why we need each other to be each other's eyes and ears. I don't know how many times I've gone through this thing of going to my sponsor talking about I'm having a hard time letting this go. I just can't seem to turn it over. I'm struggling with the third step. And he looks at me and said, don't sound like you're struggling with the third step. Sounds like you ain't got a first step. Because you refuse to admit your powerlessness in this situation. And I find myself telling that to my sponsees. And you know why I tell it to my sponsees? I may need them to give it back to me. Ain't got a whole lot to do with helping them, though I do try to help them. I'm putting insurance on my recovery. Because if I don't put insurance on my recovery, I ain't going to be there for them anyway. So I got to give them what I got just in case I might need them to give it back. I got to be able to allow them to go through the process, grow at their own rate, and as they grow, still be able to listen to them. Because it's a hell of a thing to get so caught up in something. Well, basically what happened was I had about 5 years clean. I was laid off. I was doing construction at the time. Me and one of the guys that I sponsored got a side job under the table doing some work for this guy at a strip mall. We did the work. The end of the week came. We were supposed to get paid. The guy didn't show up. You ain't gonna take my money. I'm telling Chris, okay, Monday, I know where his other job site is. I'm gonna get me a thermos of coffee. I'm gonna sit up in the hill and I'm gonna do me a Starsky and Hutch stakeout until he shows up. And if he ain't got my money, I'm gonna beat his ass to death. And Chris looked at me and he said, yeah, you'll probably catch him just after 8 o'clock. But the one thing you might want to remember is H&I still brings meetings into Jessup and you can keep your clean time. I had to get back in touch with you can go to jail clean. That $250 was not worth my freedom. And that's why it's necessary for me to give to my sponsees, because I never know when I might need it back. That in giving it to them, I got to be able to give it to them and give it to them honestly, not manipulate my sponsees, not manipulate other people. Because if I do, law of retribution always is going to catch up with you. It's always going to catch up with you. Whatever you send out is going to come back to you. So if I give my best to them, I will get the best back. And I know this, not because of me working a walk-on-water program. I know this for the simple fact that I'm really getting to know me. And what I know about me is I am incapable of unconditional love. There's always a catch to it. But I've been in this program long enough where I can do unconditional acts. And unconditional acts have allowed me to move from God's grace to God's favor, because each and every time, he always sends the right person when I need him before I even know I need him. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you. Please remember to turn all cell phones off. I'm going to introduce this next speaker. Our next speaker is Stephanie from Winchester, New York. Westchester. Thank you, Westchester.
I'm an addict, and my name is Stephanie. I could pretty much tell you if you're expecting anything deeper, then if you don't pick it up, you can't get high, it's not going to happen for me. I don't go that deep. I'm from a period of, you know what? If you don't want to use no more, this is what you got to do. They sat me down in the front seat. They used to call it the intensive care unit. They said, shut up, listen. Just listen. Don't raise your hand. Don't try to share, because we already know where the cop spots are. You have nothing to say. Just shut up and listen. And it was hard. It was hard to do that. I come into recovery today. I come into meetings today. I love this convention. I'd like to thank the convention committee for taking a risk on each and every speaker that they bring up here, because what you're doing is taking a risk. You've heard somebody share their experience, strength, and hope, and you're hoping that when they show up for your convention that you're going to get the same thing too. So I can pretty much tell you that my story doesn't change. Hasn't changed in all these years. My story is still the same. My recovery has changed. It must change in order for me to be a better person. My story, when I was using out in the street, I got clean August 19th, 1989. I could tell you it was rough. I didn't want to come into Narcotics Anonymous. I really, really didn't. My soul, my spirit wanted to get clean. But my body was kind of halfway okay with using and where I was in my lifestyle at the time. I was dating a drug dealer. I need to tell you my preface first. I was dating a drug dealer, and if you know that lifestyle, then there was a girl in the neighborhood who wanted my seat. She wanted my seat. And the guy I was dating did not know that I was getting high. So she threatened to tell him that I was using. He always said that if he ever found out I was getting high, he would kill me. I believed it. I was now open to Narcotics Anonymous. I was open. Didn't really want to come, but I was open. And I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I heard the message in my first meeting that I went to. I didn't have to come for a long time and then finally get it. I got it the very first meeting that I came here because I heard somebody who was totally unlike me share what I was going through. I identified with the pain. I identified with the misery. I identified with the suffering. I identified with the fact that he said that he would walk through his house and he couldn't look in the mirror anymore. And it wasn't because of my physical outside that I couldn't look in the mirror. It was because of my eyes. My eyes were, I had dead eyes. And towards the end of my addiction, at the end of my addiction, that's what it was about for me. There was no spirit. There was no life in my eyes. And I would pass by the mirror and I'd say to myself, who is that? I was unrecognizable to myself. I knew I needed to be here. Everything in me at that point knew that I needed to make meetings and I needed to stay clean. But like I said, I came from the land of shut up. And we'll teach you how to stay clean because we don't want to hear you tell us how we can get high. But I had been out in the street for so long, and this disease, the basic text talks about this disease taking us down to animalistic levels, isolation. So I hadn't spoken to anybody for a long time. So when I came to the meeting and I found that I can raise my hand and share some things, I wanted to talk about me. But they said, be quiet. But this disease is self-centered. What about me? And I had to learn how to shut up. And I did that over a period of time. I look at meetings in Narcotics Anonymous when I come in today. And you know, I'm just, it's a part of me that's saddened and is bittersweet. Because you can go somewhere and see how our message has been diluted by some people. And it saddens me sometimes. This is not Fix It Anonymous. This is not Dr. Phil's Anonymous. This is not Take Me on Some Intellectual Plane Anonymous. This is a program that was written by some dope fiends. We took these principles from another fellowship and we brought it into ours because they wouldn't let us go over there and share what we needed to share about what we was going through with this disease. This is a simple, simple program for complicated people. What's the simple message? That no addict need ever die from the horrors of this disease. This is a simple message. Why you got high, whether it was because of you went through things in your lifetime when you were 6 years old and you haven't recovered from those things and you just need to heal yourself. We got steps and we got traditions. We got steps for that. We have a sponsor for that. Go to your sponsor, use your sponsor. If I sound just a little bit off edge, it's because I've sat in meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting and my head hurt. Because I ain't heard nobody say if you don't pick it up, you can't get high. I ain't heard telling you that if you don't pick it up, you can't get on. If you're new to this fellowship and you're counting days clean, we got hope here. We got hope that you don't have to go through this no more, that the very last time that you used was the last time that you used. If you're sitting there with days clean and you're trying to figure out how you got to the spot where you at today, oh God, please stop. Please stop. Just try to get yourself some clean time. Make some meetings. Get yourself a sponsor. So no, my message is not deep. My message is the same message that I got when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. The topic here is spiritual manipulation. Oh, gosh. When I got that topic, my brain hurt. Damn, brain hurt. Because spirituality is spirituality. It's one of the things that we thrive and we seek and we go on a journey for when we come into this fellowship. When we take on the process of the steps, what we're seeking is spirituality. Where we've come from is manipulation. If our journey is not spirituality, we will remain in manipulation. But you need to know that the two cannot reside in the same space at the same time. It cannot. And people have been giving me their opinions over the last few days of what spiritual manipulation is. I can pretty much tell you that both of those things cannot reside in the same space at the same time. You either got it or you don't. You cannot be spiritual and manipulate at the same time. You cannot do it. Try it. Because as soon as you start manipulating, you've stepped out of spirituality. They cannot reside in the same space at the same time. But we have choices. We have choices. I personally got a little pet peeve over that word manipulation. Because the very first time that somebody ever told me that I manipulated was my sponsor. Did this process, went through steps 1, 2, 3, 4, sat down with her when it was time for 5. She created my step, my list, my assets and my liability list on step 6. And one of the words she had on there was manipulation. Not a good thing. I was upset. Because in my mind, somebody who manipulates is somebody who, you know, and plots and schemes and, you know, it's just like a puppeteer, you know. And that wasn't me. I'm good and pure. She just didn't know that yet. Defect free. I know some people come into this program with defects. I was defect free. All assets. There was nothing wrong with me. I know I'm giving you a moment to absorb all that. Because you've never seen anybody who was defect-free before. This is what it looks like. Yes. Remember that show, Mary Tyler Moore? Who can turn the world on with a smile? I was a black Mary Tyler Moore. That was me. But you know what? One of the things that this program does is that it allows us to look at ourselves honestly. Honestly. And when we do that, through the process of the steps, knowledge is power. Because the manipulation that I had done all those years, it didn't take place with you. You were secondary in the manipulation process. I was first. Because I needed to manipulate myself each and every day. He talked about it. The voice takes on the same voice as yours. Oh, man. Well, this is why I'm doing this. Or if they wouldn't have done that, then I wouldn't have had to do that. I struggled with that for a long, long time. And then coming into recovery. Ta-da. Now I had some weapons to justify my manipulation. And I did it, even with the slogans. Even with the slogans. Keep the focus on yourself. You know what we do when we come in here? We ain't really coming in here and using them as genuinely as they should be used. We're using them as weapons. And I was firing off them puppies like you would not believe. Not changing nothing. Not changing nothing. But in my mind, I was growing because I was using slogans. No, I've never manipulated a home group of mine. Never done that. Never went to put in my bid for an anniversary and didn't show up on time. And, you know, never did that. And I look at the behaviors. And, you know, one of the things that I love that they said was, when you come into recovery, sometimes people get better, but then sometimes people just get better at what they were doing out there in the street. So I did that for a while. I needed to test out my new powers. I needed to test out my new powers. And I would fire them out on you just to see how they would work. But I gotta tell you, when you come into recovery, either one or two things are gonna happen over a period of time. Either you're going to stay in the misery that you're in, or you're going to get tired of wallowing in your own messness, and you're going to change. And sometimes that change is hard, because when we manipulate our own minds, we don't even really believe that we have anything that needs to change. We believe that it's all about you. So when I came into this fellowship and I was hanging out with the brothers, and it was cool for me to hang out with the brothers because I was used to the brothers. I wasn't really used to the sisters. So I manipulated my own mind. They don't like me. They don't like me. They can't stand me. So I can't stand them either. And I would walk around this fellowship angry at women, not even understanding why I was angry at women. I'd be fine. But then all of a sudden, now I'm angry. Ain't nobody did nothing to me, said nothing to me, ain't it, nothing. But I was still carrying that. Manipulation. But then telling myself that the brothers, they're really concerned about me. They just want to love me till I learn how to love myself. Madness. This is the manipulation that goes on into the mind of me. And you start believing this. And you need to know that if you're coming in here with any of those, I call those thoughts the boogies. If you got boogies in your head and you feeding them, because it's what we feed that grows. And if we're feeding negative stuff into our own spirit, guess what it is that we're reaping? We're reaping negative stuff in our spirit. So we need to be careful of everything it is that we take inside. So manipulation, it has to go. But it's a struggle. It's a struggle. Especially when you want to do what you want to do. And you have knowledge of this program. Because you can flip the steps to accommodate your insanity. You can flip a step and justify it where it makes sense. That's insane. But you got to be coming around for a minute in order to do that. You got to come around, and you need to trade in some of your stuff. Like, you need to trade in your open-mindedness and your willingness for self-righteousness. You need to trade in some stuff. I'm not trying to trade in anything today. I'm just trying to get better today because I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm getting older. I can't run that fast. My steps is getting shorter. And the only thing I really want to do is stay clean for the rest of my life. I love what this process has to offer me. I love what recovery is offering me. And I want more of it. That's what the basic text tells me. But in order for me to do that, I got to take you to a place where, you know, I call a matrix. And if you've ever seen the movie, that's where my life is today. Everything is a choice. You take the red pill or you take the blue pill. Depending on what pill I take on any given day, it'll define who I am. In any situation. Damn, he look fine. He looks so fine, he make my hair hurt. Oh, he make my hair hurt. Oh, he living with somebody? What is they married? They ain't married? Do you take the red pill? Or do you take the blue pill? Because, see, the red pill is going to take me into a place that's oh so familiar to me. Because that lifestyle, I've been there and I've done that. Do I want to go back there? But the blue pill allows me to keep my dignity, my self-respect, my self-worth. And that's fine. I love that. So why is the struggle so hard for me sometimes? If this is a very simple program for complicated people, then why is the struggle so hard for us on any given day? Money management. They talk about money being a mood changer in this fellowship. It's not that deep. You take the red pill, you take the blue pill. Can you go to the convention? Can you afford it? Is your lights paid? Is your rent paid? Car note paid? Insurance paid? Not paid? You can't go to the convention. This is not a deep program, people. This is not deep. You take the red pill, you take the blue pill. You take the blue pill, then you stay home, you pay your thing. Somebody bring you back a CD, a T-shirt. We are the world, we are the children. You're good. You take the red pill, now we going back in the yesteryear. Oh, man, if I just pay half of the utility, I know I can finagle it where if I just do the insurance. Okay, I don't have to pay the car insurance on time. I can wait to the cancellation date. See, that's work. That's work. I'm too old for this kind of work. I need stuff to be real simple. Real simple for me. Because if my life is not simple, then it gets chaotic. And now I got to manipulate stuff. This brain ain't made for all that thinking like that no more. I just want to protect my serenity. I want to get up in the morning. I want to talk to God. I want to ask him to use me in any way that he can so somebody else don't have to go through what I went through in my lifetime. See, that's simple. Everything else that goes on during the course of the day, that's fluff fluff. I need my life to be fluff fluff. I don't need anything to be that deep. So what do? I remain in this program, but I remain active in this program. I need to remain active in my recovery. I need to consistently take an inventory of myself and where I'm at today. Consistently, I need to do that on the days when I don't want to. Because when you've been coming around over a period of time, you know this program. And that's about it. You know the program. You know. And you get the I knows. I know. You about to struggle through a problem and somebody say, call my sponsor. I'm 20 years clean with you. Make my own decisions. Call my sponsor. For what? I'm grown. There goes the manipulation. There goes the boogies in the mind telling me that I can work this program differently. When it tells me I'm an addict. It tells me that self-centeredness is the core of my disease. And once again, I want to come into Narcotics Anonymous, and because I got some time, I want to manipulate the program to work what's best for me. So I don't want to call my sponsor on a regular basis. I'll check in on a monthly basis. Step. What a step. I haven't done the steps. Over and over again, I know the steps by heart. As a matter of fact, I can do the steps myself, with myself. And I'll just update my sponsor and tell her that I've moved on to the next one. Man, insanity. And all of this begins to sound good. No, I'm going to a meeting, but, you know, the front seats are for the newcomers. I'll sit in the back. Because I understand how this program works. Hey, how's everybody doing? Drive-by recovery. No, I left the lights on and I couldn't find a parking spot, so I can't come in. I'm just going to just wave and let folk know that I came by the meeting. In my mind, that sounds good. It sounds good in my mind that I have an 8-year-old son, so I can't really make a meeting during the week because I have a son to take care of. Sounds good over a period of time. Begin to justify it. I got to work in the morning. Ain't got to be worked till 10 o'clock. I got to work in the morning. Can't make a meeting tonight. Begins to make sense in our own mind. But how many times have you sat in a meeting and your jaw dropped open because you saw somebody with some time come down the middle aisle surrendering because they picked up? And you said to yourself, how'd that happen? I just saw him in a meeting the other day. Yeah, you saw him in a meeting the other day. Passed him by. How you doing? But did you see him sitting down? Did you see him sharing from the floor? Did you see him speaking with a newcomer? Did you see him giving out his phone number? Did you see any of that? Because over a period of time, you know, it's other folk that'll do that. Let the people with 7 and 8 years take care of that. I'm on a different plane. I'm on a different plane. I've done my part. Let me be the beacon of light. Anybody seen the Ten Commandments? You know how Joshua told the guy, go stand on the rock. Go stand on the rock, Moses. Give the people hope. Yeah, right. That's not what it's about. If I don't stay new, and I don't mean new as far as time, but I mean new as far as spirit. If my spirit cannot remain new, then complacency sets in like you would not believe. And I know my check mark for complacency is when people come up to surrender at a home group, and you know how they, you know, the new people come in and we tell them, keep coming back, keep coming back. If I sit there that whole time and run my mouth, something wrong. Because you mean to tell me that somebody took enough courage to come in here on their very first day in Narcotics Anonymous and walk all the way down that aisle, past all of these faces, and come up and hug somebody and say, I need some help. And I have the audacity to sit there and run my mouth because Kohl's had a sale? Well, I got a new Liz Claiborne pocketbook, girl. But I remember. See, because if you don't remember, you're in trouble. I remember the very first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I remember walking down that aisle for the first time. I remember how scared and shaken I was. And hoping to God that this program would work. It's gotta work. Because ain't nothing else work. I've hid my money. From myself, manipulation. Yeah, I've hidden my money from myself in the back of my closet, in the pocket, in the lining, in the coat, in the back, and put it back there thinking I wouldn't find it 2 o'clock in the morning from myself. I'm not gonna find that. That's safe money. Are you kidding me? No money was safe. No money was safe. When it come a knocking, it come a knocking. Manipulation, you know what, all right, I get paid on Thursdays, all right, okay, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to get one, I'm going to get 25, no, wait, I'm going to get a 50, and I'm not going to cop because I don't cop, I'm going to send somebody else to cop, and I'm going to get them a 25 so they don't tap mine, right, so I'm going to get them their own. I'm the puppet master, y'all. I'm the puppet master. I'm manipulating stuff here. And I'm going to get them their own so they don't have to mess in mine. And I'm just going to use that. But it's Thursday, and Bill Cosby comes on between 8 and 8:30. So for respect for Bill Cosby, I don't get high between 8 and 8:30. Because he's a black man trying to do what he got to do. So I respect him. You need to know what that last commercial? I was sitting here in a rocking chair. Because I got high in a rocking chair. That's insanity. I didn't want to touch on the insanity because I don't look crazy now. So I didn't want y'all, you know, I pretty much thought I could get away with y'all not knowing that I had a little bit of crazy before. Because I already told you I was defect free. So I got high in a rocking chair with a stethoscope around my neck. Why are you looking at me like that? You said you was intelligent too. So I was intelligent. And I figured that if I got high with a stethoscope, Because people was dying back then, like Elliott Bias, basketball players, they was dropping dead from drug overdoses. So I figured this is the master plan. Let me get a stethoscope and I can time myself. And then when it was appropriate to take the next one, I would. Yeah, it is crazy. Stop laughing. Because you did your own insanity. This is my story. And I would sit there and I would do what I had to do, and then I would sit there and time it. Okay, it's time for the next one. Okay, time it. It took me a long time to get high, folk, all right? Y'all need to know that. And pretty much towards the end, nobody really got high with me, because they didn't really want to get high with me at the end. Because they kind of thought it was a little crazy. But I was smarter than they were, because I manipulated my own mind into thinking that I was the genius. It took me a minute when I got in recovery before I began to identify with who I really, really identified with. Because they talk about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And I understand that and I can respect that. But the person who I most identified with in active addiction was Wile E. Coyote. From the Roadrunner. He had a master plan each and every day. Every day he was trying to get the next one. Every single day. And he tried with all his heart. And he didn't care how beaten and battered he was, how many trucks beep ran over him. He was determined. And so was I. So we were like soulmates. Because I knew what he was going through. Right to the edge of the cliff. He knew what was there. But this time gonna be different. Gonna be different this time. And sometimes we carry that kind of thinking in every area of our lives, whether it's our jobs, our families, or relationships. Oh God, I said relationships. Okay, I've cursed for the first time tonight. No manipulation in relationships. I don't think there's, what, you know, oh damn. That's a whole different story. A whole different story. Puppet master in relationships. That's a whole different story. I'd like to think that I was just as genuine and Mary Tyler Moore-ish in relationships as, oh man. But you needed to do what I said. It was important that you understood that in order for this relationship to work successfully, you needed to follow the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of the Stephanie program. Because I had some steps and some traditions that would work and make this work for us. Man. Needless to say, I'm alone. You ain't gotta wonder why, my brother. I'm gonna tell you. You ain't even got to wonder why. You ain't gotta wonder why. Because sometimes, you know, I used to wonder why myself. Why? I don't understand. I mean, you know, I pretty much think I'm okay looking. You know, you ain't got to put a bag on my head to, like, you know what I'm saying? I think I'm pretty much okay, you know? So what's the issue here with y'all? And I love my sponsor. I love her to death, who, you know, constantly, you know, reels me in and, you know, in her loving and caring and sharing voice. Well, you know, Stephanie, who's the common denominator in all these situations? You want to take the red pill or the blue pill, Stephanie? The blue pill will say, you know, it's me, sponsor, it's me. What can I do in order to change? Is there a step that you want to put me on? The red pill is, I'm going to cut this heifer. But I got to do the work. I have to do the work. Steps, traditions, great, wonderful. But it's a triangle. What's at the top of the triangle? It must be God. Folk don't want to talk about that. Don't nobody want to hear the word God, and because we get it twisted, and we think that God means religion, and it doesn't. It means God. It means spirituality. It means the top. It's a reason why the basic text tells us that things like, and the rest of these steps will not work. This is a God-centered program. It's God-based. It's all about the love in this program. And once you remove it, now you've manipulated the entire program of Narcotics Anonymous. And you can tell by your sharing and your caring. You can tell when you sit in a home group and you're sitting in a business meeting. Look at the folk that's jumping up out of the seat. And they're firing off. It's like, whoa. Calm down. Relax. But if you listen to the tone, don't listen to the words, listen to the tone. It sounds like venom. It sounds like an attack. What's missing? There's no love in that. There's no love in that. What you're saying may be helpful. It may be great. But if you're firing it off like a weapon, then something's missing. And we do that, especially when it comes to business meetings, because we believe that the person who speaks the loudest is the one that's right. The one with the loudest voice. They must be right. And they're not. And they're not. See, intuitively, we know in our spirit when something is right and something is wrong. When the manipulation comes in, now we've screwed ourselves. I take the red pill, I take the blue pill. I got a job going to work. Oh, by the way, I'm not working now. I got laid off. They called me in the office. Laid me off. Okay, don't get stuck there, Stephanie. I'm sorry. All right. But let me tell you how God works, because they laid me off in January. Back in November, because of my position in my jobs, some paperwork came through my office, and it was the upcoming budget for 2009, and my name wasn't on it. He told me already what the deal was that was coming up. I began to prepare myself. Paid my rent 3 months in advance. Thank you that we can do that today, because we're responsible. So I sat back pretty till April. Till pretty. Unemployment, collecting stuff in, just chilling. Just made a decision to go back to school. I got a 94 on my final exam and 100 on another final exam. Sitting pretty. Never thought I'd be able to go back to school. Because the manipulation in my own mind, you can't go back to school, you old. The drugs done ate up your mind. You ain't gonna be able to keep up. Manipulating my own mind. Getting in my own way. I used to hear a slogan, get out your way. I could never understand that. Get out your way. I didn't get it. How do you get out of your way? You're not, how do you get out of, oh. See, sometimes I could be a little slow. But when I get it, I get it. And I realized that I was my biggest enemy. I was telling myself no before other people could tell me no. I came in recovery to make my life better. But I was shooting myself down each and every time. No, I can't. No, I can't do that. No, no, I can't. I can't do that. No, I can't do that. Well, in God's time, it'll work out. I don't know if that's God's will for me. To some really, really intelligent person told me that God will never place something in front of you that you can't handle without you being prepared for it. Once he places it's there, it's up to you to start the preparation process and do it. Wow. I can go back to school. I've accomplished more in the last 3 months that I've been laid off than I have in the last 3 years that I worked on that job. I've gone back to school. I got my certification in domestic violence. That was a biggie for me because I was a victim for so long. What? But the boogies say, you can't do that. You can't do that. Somebody hit you last year. Somebody hit you last year. It's about coming in here and changing. Coming here and changing. And not changing everything. Because I hear people say, you got to change everything. You don't have to change everything. Because we didn't come in here totally without. Because before we picked up, guess what? We had some good traits in us. We were honest people. We were pure people. We were good people. We were sharing people. We were compassionate people. So we don't have to change everything. But we do need to change the things that aren't healthy, the things that are not conducive to our recovery process. If you've tee-hee-heed or laughed at anything I said, then you understand the process of manipulation. Man. I'm sitting here because I'm going through a situation and I refuse to share about it. Because my mind has already told me, I've shared, I understand what I have to do now. I got this. I can work it out when the meeting is over. I'll be well by tomorrow. Because that's what it says. That's what it says. For the person who's new in this fellowship, if you don't seem to understand what's going on in Narcotics Anonymous, if you're counting minimal days clean, or if you've been here coming around for a while and you haven't had the desire to like really sit down and start working the steps, you need to know that one of the things I love that my sponsor says is you can do whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do, as long as you can stand the pain. As long as you can stand the pain. You want to sleep with him? Sleep with him. As long as you can stand the pain. You want to stay on that job that you know you're not supposed to be on? As long as you can stand the pain. You want to spend your rent money on convention? As long as you can stand the pain. But thank God for the Matrix. Red pill, blue pill. I'm serious. This works, people. Go through a situation and give yourself, because a lot of times we don't feel we have choices. There's always a choice. There's all, in every situation, there's always a choice. Stop. Give yourself a moment to ask yourself, do I take the red pill? Do I take the blue pill? We've all made that decision just sitting here in this meeting with the music pumping and, you know, and damn, the music is jamming. I got my good clothes on. You take the red pill? You take the blue pill? Because you take the red pill? Yeah, you can go downstairs. You can go down there. You'll be saying tomorrow why. I'm talking to myself when I say that. Because he looked good. Oh, he looked good. But I'm taking the blue pill. And when I leave this meeting, I'll hang out for a minute. Then I'll take myself back to the hotel. Alone. And I'll feel better about it in the morning. Thank you for letting me share.